when I first took over in April of 2013, one of my primary goals was to get out and talk to the community. You know, while we did a number of walk and talks in the neighborhood, shook hands with individuals, listened to what their concerns, and gave them a venue to express what their frustrations were with the police department, in some cases with the city as a whole. So in many ways, we credit the community for coming together.
How would you describe police-community relations today?
I think, compared to about 10 months ago, they are much better. You know, when we are facing issues in the community, when we're looking for information in the community, they're more open and willing to come and talk to us about things that have taken place, you know, whether there's a homicide or a robbery. And I will say this, is that going back about 7 months, that wasn't really the case. I mean, but part of this has been that we've been out talking to people in the community, the officers taking ownership in their responsibility areas, and working to, create that trust and that communications.
I've read that you go out in plain clothes once a week. You go door to door, you knock on the door, you talk to people. What else goes into your overall philosophy about dealing with the community and improving those relationships?
Well, I'll tell you, the big thing is having that open line of communications. One of the things that I found in speaking with people in the community is that this is something that never happened before. It's for a police chief to show up on someone's doorstep and say, hey, listen, tell me what your problems are and how can we help resolve those issues together. You know, going into the churches, going into the mosques, I have officers who are now assigned to our Muslim communities. I have officers who are assigned to our Hispanic communities. I have officers who are assigned to the Asian communities. And it's not just a black issue or a white issue. It's a community issue. And so having those individuals there, having their fingers on the pulse of what's happening in those communities, and then having us have the ability to work together to try to resolve those things have been very beneficial to us.
Here in Rochester, some members of the minority community feel that they are profiled, that they are unfairly targeted by police. And this certainly is not unique to our city. How do you think an entire community effectively bridges a gap like that?
Well, I tell you, part of it is education. You know, I will tell you in Sanford, just educating the community on what the criminal law works, how criminal law affects them, how civil law affects them as well, and traffic laws. I mean, the more we talk about what the issues are, the more we educate the community on what, laws are and how the laws work and how to prosecutorial sections work, the better we have the better ability to resolve the issues that arise in the community. So when we start talking about the profiling, one of the things that we've done here is all of my officers have gone through a bias-based policing and checking, looking at what their biases are and checking their biases before they go on the street. You know, taking that extra couple of seconds to, when you're speaking to a person, think about how you would want to be treated, how you would want a response to take place. And then, put yourself in that individual's position as well. So if you want to be treated politely, you want to be treated correctly, then you need to treat the people who you're dealing with on a daily basis in that manner.
How have your officers responded to this type of training? Had they experienced it before?
No. It was kind of, I will tell you, during my first 30 days, one of my primary things were before I went into the community, I had to look at my own community within the police department. So during those first 30 days, I met with everyone in the police department, either individually or as a group. We had a number of group meetings where there were no command officers in there other than myself, so that I could get a good feel for what the issues were, where the issues were, and how things were happening internally with the officers. And then from there, started to explain, here's how we need to go forward. Here are the things that we're going to do to go forward. And I will tell you, it was kind of interesting when I told them that one of the things we're going to do is go door-to-door. We're going to go door-to-door. We're going to start talking to people. We're going to try to find out what those issues are. We're going to try to bridge the gap. We're going to try to, regain the trust. You know, Sanford has had a very, very long history of separation, segregation, and in some places or in some ways just a tolerance for intolerable things. And we wanted to make sure, at least I wanted to make sure, that going forward, the officers had a true philosophy about community policing, being a part of the community, talking about the things that were there, and being a part of everything.
So it was not just an adjustment, something new for the community. It was something new for the officers on the force.
Yes, yes. It was a change of mindset. It was a change of perception. You know, it's kind of like taking a chisel and breaking away a paradigm that had been in place for many, many years. And, I have brought on some very young, some very dynamic, some outgoing officers, I would tell you, in the past. I have 130 sworn officers, and in the past 10 months, I've hired 17 new officers on the department. Kind of unheard of in a community of this size, but the cross-section and diversity has been just a boom for us, so that, you know, you can't effectively resolve the issues in a community if you don't look like the community, if you don't speak like the community, if you're not truly a part of that part of the community. So affecting a change internally affects the change externally.
Our new mayor here in Rochester has said that she wants to return to police precincts. Previous administration got away from that, I think, largely due to budgetary constraints. Well, generally speaking, how important is it for a neighborhood to personally know the officers who patrol their streets, and for those officers to know the individuals of a given neighborhood? Is that a big deal in your mind?
Well, you know, it's good for them to know who, coming from Chicago, suburban Chicago, one of the things that we had, there were beat officers. Here, they're called CSAs. The officers knew who the people are that's there. They know every baby's mama, daddy's, they know who the individuals are. When there's an issue or a problem that occurs in that community, having that knowledge, having someone that the community is comfortable going to, knowing that, you know, they can pick up their telephone and call Officer Strobridge and say, hey, listen, Josh, here are the things that are happening. Can you help me? I mean, it becomes a huge holistic approach. And, you know, for us, having the CSAs or having those officers, you know, in those areas also assists in our code administration. It helps in our parks department. It helps with the youth programs. So having that face, having that phone number, having that direct contact with someone in the police department is very important.
You know, we talked about how that lack of trust can become insidious within a community. And until it's addressed, crimes go unsolved, police tell us, because this lack of trust keeps people who may know something about how a crime was committed from sharing that information from the authorities. Did you see that? Do you still see that in your community?
When I first took over, it was huge. You know, when I first told the officers, I'm going to go out into the community by myself, my new deputy chief, who was a captain at the time, would say, Chief, are you taking your gun with you? And I'm like, no. Look, I'm from Chicago, and people used to shoot at us all the time as police officers. So if they're going to have an issue, whether I have a gun on or not, they're going to still have an issue. You know, going out and having that human face, putting a human face in conversation, being out in the community has been huge, huge for me. And to getting to know who the individuals are, stepping outside of the box, being outside of the just general dynamics of policing. You know, driving in a squad car, you don't have a contact with the community unless you're reacting to something that's there. But being a little more proactive to talk to people on their own level, talk to them at their level and understanding what their issues are, and then trying to resolve the issues in a much more casual human face.
We've heard what you think about what the police should do to further enhance police-community relations. What does the community need to do? What's on our back?
One of the toughest parts for me coming in as a new chief was that there was a sense of entitlement in the community that says, you know, I am entitled to these things. And the tough part is you may be entitled to the things, but sometimes you have to work for that entitlement. You have to work to make sure that your community is safe. You have to work to get the drug dealers off. You have to work with us to bring economy in. You have to work with us to make sure that your streets and parks are safe. So it becomes, yes, you are entitled to things or a certain level of service, but at the same time, ownership, taking ownership in your community is extremely important.